Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
Doing quite well. We have a show today that is heavy on lawsuits and with no guest. I think people are pulling their punches and not making much news, not wanting to come on the show because the primary election is less than a week away.
It's so close. I feel like it snuck up on me really fast. Like, I just got my candidate's bumper sticker on my car a week ago.
Oh, man. Okay, well, yeah, it is. It's happening. If you're a regular My Old Kentucky Podcast listener, your friends and family may be asking you, as the political person in your family, who they should vote for. That might be starting to happen to you now. But anyways, we have a show for you that is heavy on lawsuits. Jasmine's going to tell us about a lawsuit that Allison Lundgren Grimes, the Secretary of State, has filed about the legislation that was passed that stripped her of some powers. I'm going to talk to us a little bit about a lawsuit that Andy Beshear has filed against insulin makers. Jasmine's going to tell us about a big grant that Kentucky has received from the EPA that deals with water, which is an interesting story. And then we're going to do a very short version of predictions. We're not going to predict who wins. We're going to predict other things, potentially. And then we have some quick hits. So without any further ado, Jasmine, tell us about Allison Lundgren Grimes' lawsuit.
Okay, so we mentioned this as part of quick hits last week, but just wanted to update you all a little bit about the meat of the lawsuit. So last Monday, Allison Lundgren Grimes filed a lawsuit to block HB 114, and that's the law that strips her, the Secretary of State, of her powers. She's asking for a temporary injunction while the lawsuit is pending and a permanent injunction. She says that if the temporary injunction isn't granted, that there will be confusion and uncertainty around the primary election unless the law is invalidated.
Mm-hmm.
She's arguing that the law is unconstitutional because it violates separation of powers. So, you know, separation of powers. She's part of the executive branch, and this is an instance where the legislature has stripped the executive of powers.
Right.
Right. But she's also arguing that it's unconstitutionally vague and that it wasn't properly passed by the legislature. So we just talked about unconstitutional vagueness.
Right.
A few weeks ago, right?
Uh-huh, we did.
And so this is actually a similar issue. A couple weeks ago when we talked about it, we talked about how a law didn't have a definition for a strike.
Right.
And in this case, the law makes improper use of the voter registration system a misdemeanor. So this is where the vagueness arguments come in. What does improper use mean? So
right.
It's not defined in the law. So she's making a vagueness argument about this improper use piece of it.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. And other things, just to, you know, recap what HB 114 does, the law removed the Secretary of State as the chairwoman of the State Board of Elections, and it makes her a non-voting member.
Mm-hmm.
It also does some other things. It also added two retired county clerks, one Democrat and one Republican, to the board. It's actually the sixth time that laws governing the State Board of Elections have been changed since it was formed in 1972. It used to have two members and the Secretary of State. So another, you know, something to note about this, if the Secretary of State is a non-voting member, it has three Democrats and three Republicans on the board.
Right.
So it could also cause like gridlock issues.
Sure.
If there isn't someone to, you know,
break
a tie.
Right.
Also, an issue is the title. And this is the second time we've talked about the title of a law as well. So the title of this bill is an act relating to elections and declaring it an emergency. So, you know, we talked about this before. An emergency clause means that a law will go into effect immediately once it's signed by the governor instead of July 1st, when most other laws go into effect. And she said that the title is not relevant to the bill. And it also didn't say why there needed to be an emergency clause. So those are all the reasons she's saying that it's unconstitutional because it violates separation of powers. It's unconstitutionally vague. And the title isn't relevant, and it didn't state why it needs to be an emergency.
Yeah.
And her attorneys, you know, they also say in the complaint that they call it a politically motivated attempt of the legislative branch to circumvent the power of the executive. So, I think this, the big part of this is a separation of powers argument, but there's also other little arguments of why it wasn't passed properly and that it's unconstitutional. You know, we'll see what happens if a temporary injunction isn't granted, then this new law will be in place when the primary occurs.
It looks like, without a temporary injunction, this will be in effect next week.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That will be an interesting thing to see happen. I'm not really quite sure how much impact, unless there's like a recount or something that needs to happen, the Secretary of State actually has in actually counting the votes. But, you know, we'll
Allison
see.
Lundgren Grimes feels like there's going to be a lot of confusion if, you know, this new law is in effect. She didn't attend the first meeting of the State Board of Elections after this law went into effect, but she's attended one and she felt like everyone was confused.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like I think this makes sense that this was kind of rushed to the floor. It wasn't like a lot of thought that went into this. I think it all kind of came out of all the scandals that she's kind of been part of in the past couple of years. So I'm not too surprised that they kind of rushed this after the stuff came out. But
I'm sure that it was politically motivated. Yes. Like, I don't think that... there's an argument that it wasn't.
Right. I don't think anybody argues that is not the case. All right. I'm going to tell us now about a lawsuit involving Andy Beshear and some insulin makers. Okay, so Kentucky's Attorney General and gubernatorial hopeful Andy Beshear filed suit against three insulin manufacturers, and they are Eli Lilly, Novo Nordisk, and Sanofi, who I think it said that they make up like 96% of the insulin market in Kentucky. The suit says that the manufacturers have increased prices exponentially, citing manufacturing costs between about $2.25 and about $6.33, and an average wholesale price for insulin of about $300.
That's huge, right?
Yeah. Not a lot of stuff has that sort of profit margin built in. Yeah, that seems very bad. The suit says that Novo Nordisk increased prices from $255 in a package back in July of 2012, to $558 in July 2018. And it said Sanofi increased prices about 218% to 285%, and said Eli Lilly's insulin increased in price from $236 to $530. So all three of these companies are guilty in Andy Beshear's eyes of raising prices. And I think that, you know, they would not argue that those facts, that they have indeed increased prices. The suit anticipates that the argument by the drug makers in defense of this is that prices don't matter. So we've talked a little bit about healthcare on the show over the years. And really, you may understand a little bit more about how like prices don't matter. It seems like a weird argument, but it's kind of rooted in truth. List prices in healthcare aren't really what many people pay. They're a starting point for negotiations, which are often dismissed by payers. So, you know, Novo Nordisk comes and says, here's our price for insulin. And Humana or whatever your pharmacy benefit is, they say, that's ridiculous. We're paying you less than that. And that's how a negotiation starts. So like I said, the lawsuit kind of anticipates this argument, and it kind of points out that pharmaceuticals are a little bit different. We did a show a few months ago about PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, and I'd encourage you to go back and listen to that to learn a little bit more about the ways drugs get bought and sold if you're interested in this. But the suit actually does a pretty extensive breakdown about PBMs and their impact on insulin prices, explaining how the bidding process to make it into like a tier one preferred status for a PBM occurs. That's when, you know, your drug gets preferred over all of the others. And since insulin is kind of a, doesn't really matter if you get your insulin from Novo Nordisk or Sanofi, it's basically the same product. Getting into that tier one is a big deal. The lawsuit both explains how to get into the tier one and what benefits drug makers receive for winning those bids. And then also how the rebating process works. So that's the process by which, you know, basically drug makers pay to get into that tier one place. The suit does, a good job of describing how shadowy this whole situation is and how we don't really understand what's going on behind the scenes and how our drugs get paid for. The suit says, quote, whether defendants intended people to pay them, the not-so-relevant price defendants falsely disseminate determine the market, affecting prices paid by wholesalers, pharmacies, and most unfortunately, uninsured and underinsured people with diabetes, unquote. Now, that statement is very true.
Right.
The people who get hit with those list prices are disproportionately people who do not have insurance because they pay the list price. They say, I want to buy this. How much does it cost? And they say, here's your cost. Now, those people likely could negotiate, but you don't really negotiate at McDonald's. Most of the stuff that you buy, you don't negotiate. So people are used to, when seeing a price, paying that price.
Right. And that's a huge increase in what the price was before.
Absolutely. So that's a little bit about the background, but the actual legal issues brought up by the suit involve violations of the Kentucky Consumer Protection Act and the Kentucky False Advertising Statute, as well as unjust enrichment, which I think is like one of those legal terms that I don't really fully understand, but probably has a different full legal definition somewhere in there that you learned at one point in law school.
Yeah, it's a contract thing.
Yeah, I don't know what it means. Anyways, the suit says that having inflated prices, charging deceptive prices to uninsured people, and concealing the actual price of insulin constitutes a violation of the Kentucky Consumer Protection Act, and that having a list price that does not equate to the actual price constitutes a violation of the false advertising statute. So from a legal standpoint, that's how the suit argues that these price increases and the behaviors of these drug makers violates the laws. The suit seeks $2,000 for each violation of the Consumer Protection Act and $10,000 for violations against people who are 60 years and older. That could get really pricey. CHFS, the Cabinet for Health and Family Services, said in 2015 that there's about 359,000 Kentuckians with diabetes. So that's, you know, can get into, you know, 10 figures pretty quickly. The suit has been filed in Franklin Circuit Court and has not yet been assigned to a judge. But there's only two of them, and we know who both of them are, so there you go.
I think it's nice to see an attorney general filing these consumer protection suits, so I think this is a positive thing for Andy Beshear.
Yeah, we need to have more Democrats that are running for governor who are attorney general. You know, both when Jack Conway and Andy Beshear were running, we got a lot of really good suits filed.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is really important to have a attorney general that cares about this kind of stuff. So, all right, Jasmine, tell us what we need to know about Kentucky getting money from the EPA.
Okay, so it was announced earlier this week that Kentucky is getting $38 million from the EPA. And it's for water systems. So the American Society of Civil Engineers have given Kentucky a C+ and a C- in their last two water system grades. Rural counties in particular have pretty old drinking and wastewater systems. So the EPA is giving us $38 million to fix that.
Great.
So this is part of a $2.6 billion project authorized by the Trump administration. There isn't a plan yet for how the funding is going to be used, but there's a draft in the works. Utilities that need the funds will apply for funds once there's a plan for how they're going to use the money.
Right.
So when I was reading about this, there were some maps that the Energy and Environment Cabinet made that rate infrastructure age around the state from poor to excellent. And what I realized is there's really no geographic pattern to it. There are poor rated infrastructures literally in every region of the state.
Right.
They're all over the place. I would say the two maps, there's one for drinking water systems and then there's one for wastewater systems. The poor drinking water systems were a little bit more concentrated in far western Kentucky. And then the poor wastewater systems were kind of concentrated in central Kentucky, like in the counties that cluster around Lexington. But I mean, they were spread out all over the state, but those two regions had more poorly rated infrastructure than others.
Right.
But, you know, the biggest water crisis in Kentucky that's been talked about is in Martin County. Their water situation has been really bad for decades, but things kind of peaked last year when people had their service shut off. A lot of members of the water board just quit. And then the AG's office opened a mismanagement investigation. And so if you'll remember, people advocated for Governor Bevin to declare a state of emergency, but he didn't do that. So hopefully Martin County and some of these other communities will get some relief for this money that we're getting from the EPA.
Right. Yeah, you talked a little bit about that would be a drinking water issue in Martin mm-hmm. County that we've all kind of heard about. But Louisville has like really horrible wastewater situation. There was a guy that died in the middle of a flood that was a cab driver mm-hmm. last year. So, you know, lots of bad stuff happening all
right.
over
it's
the place.
Literally everywhere, not in just rural areas. Louisville seeing it, Lexington seeing it, especially in wastewater systems. So hopefully there's a good plan for how to use this money and the people that need it will get it.
Yeah. I mean, Kentucky is not alone as a state that has a significant infrastructure needs.
Right. I believe like the nation's rate was a D.
Right.
So maybe we're doing better than some states, but it's still bad.
It doesn't seem like there's much. I mean, that's one of the more frustrating things about federal politics for me right now is like infrastructure seems like the one place that everybody agrees there's a lot of need, and there hasn't been like any movement to like do anything about it. So what are you going to do? They make jokes about Infrastructure Week. That's like a joke about federal politics. Like Donald Trump always wants to be. Yeah. Anyways. All right, Jasmine, before we get to quick hits, people have been asking us to make predictions, and I hate that. Do you hate it as much as I do?
Yeah. So I said, I'm not doing this. You do stats. So you're going to do it.
Okay. Well, yeah. Here goes
that's
nothing.
That's what happened.
Yeah. So I'm not going to actually predict who's going to win. I wouldn't be surprised if it was close. I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't that close. Honestly, I think that there's a chance. I think if it's not, here's prediction one. If it's going to be a blowout, Andy Beshear will be the one that wins. I don't think it will be a blowout, though. I wouldn't be shocked. This is not a prediction, but something I would not be shocked by if all three candidates had a percentage that started with a number three. So, mm-hmm. You know, 37, 35, and 32, whatever's left over.
Did you see Matt Jones' Twitter poll?
Yeah,
about
he had
this?
Rocky Adkins winning.
Rocky Adkins won. Elon was very close behind, and then Beshear had the least. But obviously, it's very non-scientific, and Twitter polls can be very skewed because people not voting in the Democratic primary might just pick one so that they can see the results. You
right,
know?
Absolutely. And also, I think Mike Rutherford should do one for, you know, the same so we could get, like, the Google fans. Like,
yes, exactly.
Yeah, right. So we should do that. Anyways, okay. Here are my four predictions.
Okay.
The things that I wrote down as predictions. I think that Rocky Adkins will win 15 counties with 75% of the vote or more.
Okay. We're going to count them and check your prediction. But I think that's a good one, though, because he has Eastern Kentucky by a lot.
Jasmine, I was in Ashland over the weekend, and I don't think that any other candidate even exists out there. And people ask me, like, do you think Rocky's going to win? That's the main question. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Boyd, you know, Rowan, Elliott, you know, Greenup, those places are going to go real heavy for Rocky Adkins. And like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if he got more than 75% of the vote in some of those places. Okay, prediction two. Andy Beshear will get a lot of votes in Western Kentucky. I expect him to win many counties in western part of the state.
How many is a lot, though? That's kind of a vague prediction.
Well,
it's unconstitutional for vagueness.
I think he'll win the majority of counties west of Louisville. Yeah.
The majority, so just more than half.
Yeah, I think more than half. I think probably more than 2/3, but I mean, I'm being intentionally vague, and this isn't a court of law, Jasmine.
Okay.
So in addition to this, I think when these results are in and we're watching the coverage on KET, someone will say, how do you explain Andy Beshear's strength in Western Kentucky? To which somebody will say, well, Steve Beshear served in the legislature from Western Kentucky, and that will not be the reason, Jasmine. Andy Beshear will win Western Kentucky, I believe, fully based on name recognition, because no other candidate made the effort to go out to Western Kentucky. And I don't want to say that too severely. I have seen Adam Edelin spend some time in Bowling Green. I've seen him go to Paducah. But like, there's a lot of places. Western Kentucky is a very large geographic region. And I just don't think that there was too much effort, especially compared to how much effort was spent in urban areas.
Right. And it's also really hard to plan events to go to Western Kentucky because, okay, if you're going to be at one place at lunchtime and then you have another event to get to later, some of those places in Western Kentucky are 5 or 6 hours away. So,
absolutely.
But if you're, you know, hitting Louisville, Lexington, Northern Kentucky, you can make that drive in an hour and a half.
Yep.
So I think that distance probably plays a role in that. But I think you're right that name recognition will be what wins out there.
That is how that's going to go down, in my opinion. Okay, Jasmine, prediction number three. Adam Edelin will win fewer than 5 counties outright, but I do not think he will come in last place.
So that means that you're betting that he does very well in Louisville and possibly also in Lexington.
Yeah, I think he will do quite well in both of those places and other population centers. I think if he wins some counties, it could potentially be, you know, Warren County. I think he has a good chance to win Henderson County. I think he may have a chance to win, you know, Davies County, places like this. I wouldn't be too surprised if even cities with small metro areas, Richmond, you know, Madison mm-hmm. County. Now, those places, though, you know, they are also swamped with a lot of like rural vote. But I wouldn't be too surprised if Adam Edelin didn't win that many counties. I said less than five here. That may be a little small, but I don't know. Maybe less than five, but still not come in last place. Yeah, there you go.
All right.
And then my last prediction. I think, and this is one I think is the easiest prediction to make. I think Matt Bevin will get more than 70% of the vote in the Republican primary. I wanted to put 80%, but I put it 70 because I was feeling wussy, and I feel like the rest of these predictions are kind of a stretch, and I'm really nervous that I'm going to get all four wrong. So there you go.
You don't think Robert Goforth is going to make a run?
Oh, no, he's running.
Well, I know.
I don't think he'll do very well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. So those are my predictions.
We're going to have a segment where we check all of these.
Yeah, you're in charge of that one, okay. Jasmine. All right. Are you sure you don't want to make any predictions? You don't. Who do you think is going to win the Republican Attorney General primary?
I honestly have no idea.
Yeah.
My guess would be Daniel Cameron.
Really?
But I honestly don't know.
See, if we were betting people, I would bet you right now. Because I really think Will Schroeder is going to win. And I bet it's not going to be close. That's my guess. That's another. Okay, we'll make that the fifth prediction. Will Schroeder wins the Republican Attorney General primary and it's not close.
But I feel like I've also paid no attention to it. And I honestly don't know what kind of name recognition Will Schroeder has. Like, I know who he is because I have a podcast about politics.
Right, right.
You know, but I don't know if other people outside of Northern Kentucky know who he is.
I don't think I don't think there's name recognition for
either.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I think you'll see like Louisville guy, Mitch McConnellite, African American candidate, and Republican in Kentucky, not gonna vote for that guy. That's how I'm feeling about it.
The reason my guess is for Dan Cameron is because of the McConnell backing and funding.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, at this point, funding, you know, how much does it really matter? How much are you going to be able to cut through? You know, being well funded is a way to say, hey, this person's going to make a lot of noise early. But this is, you know, the rubber's met the road.
Yeah.
We're less than a week away. How is that money going to translate for you into votes? You've just made a bunch of mailers that worked for Mitch McConnell to smear your opponent by saying they're a secret
Democrat.
Right.
It hasn't been a very positive campaign.
No, it's been incredibly negative. And I think that, you know, Will Schroeder is able to be like, this person is making false claims about me. And I feel like that's going to be effective. I don't think that the Mitch McConnell just completely smear your opponent and make them look like an idiot. That strategy has been employed by Mitch McConnell. And I mean, I remember he ran for Senate a long, long time ago against this woman named Lois Combs Weinberg. And he had these really horrible commercials that made her out to be like this aristocrat lady. And they had the commercial, the voice of it was like Lois Combs Weinberg. And that was like how the voice was. And I was like, that's so ridiculous, but it was effective. I don't think that sort of campaigning is nearly as effective anymore, especially in a Republican Attorney General primary. So that's my thought. So we will see that. I guess there you go. Now I have another prediction.
Yeah. I feel like you've maybe like swayed me to switch mine because I really
I'm very persuasive.
I'll stick with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you roll with it. If I was to make another prediction, I don't have specific numbers I would want to go and say. But, I mean, Democrats always have a higher turnout than Republicans in primaries because by virtue of the fact that there's more Democrats than Republicans registered in Kentucky. But I think that, like, the relative performance of Democrats will be significantly higher than Republicans. And I think that will hurt like a lot of down ballot Republicans and make it much more random. So there you go.
All right.
Some quick hits before we get out of here. In addition to the lawsuit in Franklin Circuit Court that Andy Beshear filed against the insulin makers that we talked about earlier in the show, Andy Beshear has added his name to a federal lawsuit against Teva Pharmaceuticals in Connecticut, which accused that drug maker of inflating generic drug prices. A little bit different issue. These are generic drugs, and this is a massive national issue about the pricing of generic drugs. You should definitely check it out. Stories in Insider Louisville. It's in the newsletter. You should get the newsletter. Okay. Another insider Louisville thing. Joe Sanka reports that Tier 3 Technologies is suing the Bevin administration because of Charles Grindel, who is the state's CTO, because of his close association with AT&T. The suit alleges that $6.5 million in contracts were awarded to AT&T, which duplicated work that Tier 3 was already contracted to provide. Sanka has been on this story since last September, and you know, I thought that this story was much, much better done and included much more original reporting than the ProPublica story about Kentucky Wired. That's my opinion. Okay, Jasmine, you should really read a new Ohio Valley resource report on Brady Industries, which includes some new information about the lobbying which Russell, who is Brady Industries' Russian partner, we've talked about that a little bit, this company, Russell, did some lobbying with Mitch McConnell. Congress was attempting to overrule the U.S. Treasury Department's decisions to keep sanctions on the company. The U.S. Treasury was going to remove those sanctions. Congress started the process of overruling the Treasury Department by passing a law. I think it was about to pass the House, but Mitch McConnell says if it passes the House, it will not pass the Senate. So basically, Mitch McConnell scuttled this. So you can see these Kentucky connections for this Russian company and how they're starting to pan
out. Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, that's on the Ohio Valley Resource.
I do need to read that.
Yeah, it's good. You should read it. And then lastly, a federal judge struck down the ban on dilation evacuation abortions. This was a law that was passed in 2018. That sort of abortion is common after 14 weeks of pregnancy, and the law against that was struck down by a federal judge this week. So there you go. Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page. They can listen to our podcast on the podcasting app of their choice. We also have a newsletter that comes out on Fridays, and we're partnered with Ford Kentucky to do that. And you can subscribe to it and other newsletters at fordky.com/email. And finally, we have a Patreon page where you can subscribe and sponsor us for as little as $1 a month. That's at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.